Off the Ball, GAA.
Like, I remember being on the pod with Paddy in year one, and he was just going, it was great for them to be in Dublin, they could go and they could meet and nobody bothering them, and just having them conversations over lunch. Or
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball with NoviBet, home of the best value in bet builder betting. Download and play today. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie. This is News Talk.
Okay, welcome along. Inside the Odds, our Premier League preview show on Off the Ball in association with NoviBet. I'm Mick McCarthy, joined today by David Wilson and Shane Hannan. Premier League back, lads. It feels like it's been months.
Yeah, it's that meme, isn't there, in Titanic? It's been 84 years. The old woman is on the boat, thinking back to 1912. It kind of feels like that. It's especially long when you're the international week, you have FA Cup, you have, and for Manchester United fans and Leeds fans to wait till Monday night. You know, and there's a game tonight and Friday night. So it's,
at least Leeds had the euphoric high of winning that cup game
Leeds
last week.
Played a game, it is a bit different for the teams that were out and not in Europe. It's been a long wait for. Yeah. Who am I looking at here? Wolves, Bournemouth, Brentford, Everton, Burnley, Brighton, Fulham, Palace. Palace played last night. But anyway, I won't bother going through. They are the fixtures this week. West Ham Wolves are playing tonight at 8 o'clock. That's a massive game. Arsenal Bournemouth's 12:30 tomorrow. I'm sure Arsenal will be delighted about that after being away in Europe earlier in the week. Brentford Everton is a low-key, sneaky big game, 3 o'clock on Saturday, along with Burnley and Brighton. 5:30, Liverpool v Fulham. Lots of Liverpool crisis talk to talk about before that. Palace Newcastle, 2 p.m. Sunday. Forest Villa, also 2 p.m. Sunday. Sunderland Spurs is the other 2 p.m. game. That, Shane, is live and Off the Ball.
It is indeed. Richie McCormack will be alongside Brian Kerr for that one. And then, of course, we'll have the Chelsea City game with Stephen Doyle and Keith Tracy.
There you go. I was just about to ask you, because that's the next game. But the Zerbies' first game, live and Off the Ball. Chelsea City, 4:30. And then Monday Night Football, Man United Leeds. This is a game they used to not put on at night time. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be great. Maybe, do you think they trust the Old Trafford side more than they trust the Elland Road side? For
I don't know. Maybe it's
a natural bias.
I saw Benjamin Šeško was at Crow Park yesterday promoting their game that's going to happen in August in GAHQ.
He didn't know what to say. In fairness, these lads who are playing massive stadiums, packed to the rafters every week, are being asked, what do you make of this? What's it going to be like to play? He's like, it'll be great. These lads don't care.
Yeah, it was. They're asked, Brian and Boomer went on with Diallo Report in that press conference that Matthew Brennan was at on Tuesday, and someone asked, oh, what's it mean to, you know, play at Crow Park? And they were like, it's should be good. Like, but they don't know the cultural significance of Crow Park. Anyway, that's not their fault.
Okay. We'll start with the big game of the weekend. Chelsea versus Manchester City. Sunday, 4:30. A game, as Shane mentioned, you can hear it live on Off the Ball with.
We have Stephen Doyle and Keith Tracy on that one.
There you go. This is also the game of the week, which means NoviBet will offer up to a €10 free bet if your bet builder loses on the biggest Premier League matches of the weekend, every weekend. NoviBet are offering the best value in football betting. It is a risk-free bet builder on all the biggest Premier League and Champions League matches. It is also the game for our Off the Ball bet builder of the week. I looked into this game a little bit and thought that the way I was looking at it was, I think Chelsea are going to come out swinging. I think they're going to be determined to lay down a marker, arrest the recent terrible form that they've been in the Premier League. I think beating a League One relegation candidate 7-0 isn't exactly going to change things. So I think this is a massive game for Chelsea. Their form has been absolutely terrible in the Premier League and they're really slipping from the Champions League top five. So I've gone for a tight, scrappy game, but I think one in which eventually City's experience and recent form will come to the fore. So what I've gone for is under 3.5 goals in the game, over 4.5 cards in the game. Again, I think that's Chelsea coming out hard. I've gone for over 0.5 Antoine Semenyo shots on target. He's averaging over 1.5, so he just needs one. And I've gone for Man City to score at least one goal because I do think they'll win the game. That comes out at 7-1. So there may be a little NoviBet price boost if you want to go for it on check their app over the next day or so. Chick, I'm way off here, lads. Am I right in the way I kind of see the game going?
You said under 3.5 goals. I feel like this will be a goal fest. I'll have egg on my face really, after 0-0. Yeah. I just feel like even if a team is going to win, it could be a 3-1-3-2 sort of job. Both teams touchy, going hell for leather this time of the season. I'd probably agree with you. I think City will get the job done. Like it's between now and the end of the season, it's so interesting to see who plays first between City and Arsenal, who's going to have that pressure on them. Obviously, it's entirely dependent on how Arsenal do at 12:30 on Saturday, but the pressure is either on City, the pressure's on City regardless, because if Arsenal lose or draw, then they're like, well, we have to make up some of the gap between them and win this game. But if Arsenal win, they still have to win as well. So I don't know. Yeah, I just see the goals being fairly high in this one.
Yeah.
I don't think City are looking at things like under pressure at the moment. I think they're looking at all this as a freebie. Yeah. They're suddenly in this kind of run of genuine form. I've been, again, discussing this. I talked about it on the show on Tuesday night, but I've been talking about them all year as being not as big a factor. This idea of them going on the run, I just didn't think that team was set up for it. And it had proved right up until very recently. And now they just seem a little bit more set. Since the Champions League, since they got knocked out of the Champions League, there's almost a freedom to them, and it's built more around the kind of Semenyo side of things than whatever. It's like, feels more like a Pep team now than it did earlier in the season. It just didn't seem comfortable at all.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I don't really just buy that completely. Yeah, I just don't like.
I completely understand it, because haven't. I've been in the other seat to this conversation so many times this season, and I just haven't seen it with City. I really haven't. But
yeah, like probably going out of the Champions League helps their domestic aspirations in the long run. Like the thing is, like we all think that maybe Guardiola is going to leave at the end of the season. I think he would love, obviously, to maybe go out and win the league, and win the league like this, being coming from 9 points behind. I still just don't see that happening. I don't see them doing that consistent run, especially in the Premier League, from now until the end of the season. Like, they've been boosted by that win over Arsenal, and Arsenal look like they're kind of tiring a bit. And I think, do City have a better squad? Maybe City don't have a better squad, let's say defensively, but in attacking areas of the field, I think City have better players. And I agree. Like, I think, you know, they can still put pressure on Arsenal, and they're playing a Chelsea team who, this Rossini project is not going to work. He will probably be there till the end of the season. Will they get rid of him in the summer? I don't know. But yeah, I don't back City to go on this amazing run. I still don't really trust them, but they will be boosted by winning the EFL Cup and having that good win against Liverpool last week. The only thing I would say about that win against Liverpool last week, the 4-0, like, Liverpool were terrible, like, you know?
Yeah, they were terrible, but it's against, like, their last two games have been Arsenal and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Even just from a self-confidence point of view.
Yeah.
Two fairly dominant performances.
Yeah. And are they playing these teams now? I remember you mentioned this earlier in the year, but you have to play teams at the right time, and I think this is the right time to play this Chelsea team.
Yeah, I agree.
They won 7-0 against Port Vale last week, but that's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
They were dumped out by Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League.
Yeah. One of their best players isn't playing for kind of no reason.
Yeah.
You know, other than
he's thinking the weather's absolute, nice in Madrid.
Yeah, whether it's a right or wrong decision, the reason he's not playing is because you're a basket case of a club and these things are all out in public. And
yeah,
that's a bizarre situation though. Like
of course,
sometimes you feel like Rossini is trying to, you know, put the foot down a little bit, look like the big guy.
Of course.
I make the decisions, I'm the gaffer.
I'm so transparent.
Yeah, yeah. Like, not the time to be getting rid of one of your best players.
Like, drop him for one game and, like, you can kind of get away with
Port Vale.
But, like, drop one of your best players for Man City when you're still in this hunt for the Champions League, and they got, like, pumped by Everton, like, a few weeks ago, that 3-0 game. I think their last win in the Premier League was the 4-1 against Aston Villa, which is kind of random enough. And the last time Chelsea have beaten City... City haven't lost a head-to-head since the 2021 Champions League final between these clubs. 1-9, drawn 3, and they won 4 of the last 5 visits away from home as well. So City have had the real upper hand in this fixture.
Yeah.
And over the years, you think back to some of these Chelsea City games, City have put a clinic on display. Like, I remember beating them 6-0 a few years ago back at the Etihad. But yeah, City have a good record at Stamford Bridge, and I would fancy them to continue that this week as well.
Yeah. The reason I just think it's going to be tight is I do think, again, that Chelsea will have a mentality of containing. Kind of like they did, you know, they did it against Arsenal in the first leg in the League Cup final. Yeah. I just think they'll probably go out in that mentality of trying to get a point.
Mm.
And but I don't think they'll succeed in that. I do think there will be goals. I have City to score as part of it. I just think that they will have a sort of a negative enough attitude that will. I don't think City will hammer them.
Yeah, you shouldn't, after spending all that money with Chelsea, I know it's let's say it's a young squad, but you shouldn't, that performance they put in against Arsenal in the League Cup semi-final was embarrassing. They just kind of, suffered and just tried to hang in there and, squeeze something out of the game. That's not good enough. We've seen that with Liverpool against Paris Saint-Germain during the week. That's not acceptable. And Chelsea fans won't put up with that as well. They're a notoriously spiky home support. So yeah, if this goes badly early doors for Chelsea on Sunday, then I think they could be in for a long Sunday afternoon.
We're all kind of just on the teetering on the edge of the league's not quite over yet. We obviously know that City could beat Arsenal still, and there's a game in hand for City in there as well. But if Arsenal were to beat Bournemouth and City were to say lose to Chelsea, and it's a 12-point gap. That's the point at which it's over. The pressure is going to be massive, but for some reason at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea just can't beat Manchester City. It's a psychological thing at this stage. And
if Arsenal beat Bournemouth, though, every time Arsenal win a game at the moment, it's going to be it's feeling like a bigger mountain for Man City. I still don't think the pressure's on them. They're chasing from so far back. I think it's Arsenal. I think it's we're going to talk about that game in a minute, but if Arsenal drop points to Bournemouth, who draw every game they play in, and are not an easy out at the moment, and it's half 12 and et cetera, you're coming back from a European game away from home. It's not a straightforward game for Arsenal. If they drop points... Mm. Again, I just think City are looking at it all as a freebie at the moment. I think they're saying, right, we're going to Stamford Bridge at the best possible time. Everyone thinks there's a potential banana skin. Let's go and beat them.
Yeah.
And I think they're a good bit better than Chelsea, and especially recent form, considering it. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's the first time all season that I've thought, absolutely, I'd still have a bet on Arsenal to win the league if I was getting good odds on it. But I still think they will. But it's the first time I've thought it's in danger.
Yeah.
Precursor to the FA Cup final, this as well. Chelsea, well, potentially. Sorry, no disrespect to the two teams left in the league, Southampton.
Southampton.
But potential precursor to the FA Cup final.
I would say there is. I think Leeds have a huge chance.
I mean, we'd love Leeds and Southampton in an FA Cup final. It'd be akin to Leeds Sunderland in 73.
You kind of trust City. City tend to win cups from this type of position with these types of teams left, don't they?
Yeah. And the record in domestic cup competitions has been phenomenal.
Imagine they won a domestic treble this year for the second time in history for any team to do it, them being the first on a year when everybody wrote them off, and it's like a complete disaster. Anything else on that game?
What's your on the cards?
Over 4.5.
Yeah,
I just have a feeling it's going to be a feisty affair. I think Chelsea have they have a terrible disciplinary record. They have red cards all over the place. They also, that circle thing and all. I feel like there's a lot of shite being talked in the to each other.
Yeah,
either via through the managers or whatever way this group is. Again, with no real older players, no maturity. I think there's a lot of fake maturity happening. I think there's a lot of performative maturity happening within that Chelsea dressing room from people who aren't ready to be the leaders yet. And I think a lot of that kind of crack might be, a kind of a let's go out and get stuck into them. Well, and you can kind of see Chelsea having three yellow cards after 10 minutes.
Game, well, funny you say that. At least two Chelsea players have booked in the last six Premier League games. So they're...
Now 4.5, it's a high over-under. I think it is taking into account the fact that Chelsea get loads of cards, but
does a red card count for?
Yeah, it's all cards. Yeah,
right. Okay.
Yeah. So obviously you want two yellows there.
Two yellows, please. Yeah. No, that's fair enough. I think
two
I agree.
Two yellows
with
and a red count as three cards. That's the big question. Yeah. I'll get on to. I'll be better and ask the question. Yeah. I don't think so. By the way, just for anyone listening. All right. The one thing I was going to say again in City's favour and probably not in favour of a under 3.5 goals was I thought that Haaland, especially in the second half against Liverpool, looked like Haaland for the first time in a while.
Yeah.
I don't know what he did in the international break. I presume Norway had some friendlies. But again, you'd imagine he was lightly raced as well. I don't think he might have needed a bit of a rest.
He does look a bit... he's a phenomenal player, obviously, still, but he does look a bit jaded. And at the back of his mind, is he thinking... God, this World Cup for Norway in the summer is going to be massive. And if we start talking about World Cup over in the future, like Norway is going to be everybody's dark horse because of the players that they have. Is that in the back of his mind too? Like City, maybe is he thinking City are out of the title race? I know he'd never think like that.
Yeah, anyway. I think he's someone that probably wants to get 30, 40 goals a season as well, yeah, though, doesn't he?
I just think the City haven't played, like at the beginning of the season, City played a bit deeper and they were allowing like space. Teams have possession of the ball and they would like play balls in behind and Haaland kind of got the most out of his physical capabilities. It's kind of changed again where they've kind of gone for more control and Semenyo is doing
Semenyo's
all the
been a brilliant signing, like, yeah, hasn't he? He's just like, I mean, everybody knew he was a really, really good player. I think he'd shown enough of that. But for him to be able to make that step up and quickly become probably the most informed player at his new club.
Yeah.
I think is an unbelievable.
Yeah.
I wonder are England looking at thinking we could have convinced him.
Ah, they missed it big time. But I can't wait to see him play for Ghana in the World Cup. It'd be great.
I'm delighted he is playing for Ghana, but it's
Bernardo Silva's farewell tour begins as well. Leaving at the end of the season.
Which is
6 Premier Leagues, 1 Champions League. Like, it's not bad.
Phenomenal player as well. Yeah. And like his legs aren't, you know, they weren't ever brilliant, but you can see that he's still struggling, but he's still, I think he's Guardiola's most played player in his career. He's played the most games for Guardiola.
He's only 31, Bernardo Silva. You almost look at him, you would think he's a little bit older, maybe because he's so experienced, but 31, like maybe
his hair's gone a bit mad.
Yeah. Possibly, yeah. But 31 should be, for a lot of players, prime.
Yeah.
Potentially, maybe it's a year or two above prime, but still.
I don't know about that type of player.
That, position,
that type of player runs out of legs, don't they?
But like, he's played like right, left, number 10, number 8, number 6, like some player.
Yeah.
Okay. Reminder again then, our off the ball bet builder for this week, Chelsea versus Man City, under 3.5 goals, over 4.5 cards. Over 0.5 Antoine Semenyo shots on target and Man City to score at least one goal. It works out as 7-1 on NoviBet. And NoviBet will offer up to a €10 free bet if your bet builder loses on the biggest Premier League match of the weekend every weekend. Right, let's stay with the title race. Arsenal Bournemouth, 12:30 tomorrow. We've talked about it a little bit. I watched this match on Tuesday night with Keith Tracy. He was in on the show. And like, I had Madrid and Bayern Munich on my laptop here and we were watching the Sporting Arsenal game on the TV.
Sorry to hear that.
Oh man, like, it was like watching two different sports.
Yeah.
Side by side. You know the way you say that when you watch the hurling last week, it was like the 1B final, the intensity versus the 1A final. It was like two different sports, you know? And you know that if you drop Clare in there, you know, they would have lifted it and it would have been a different type of game, and that's fine. And you kind of think the same about Arsenal. If Arsenal were in a better game, they would perform. They should be up to the standards of Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. I'm just not convinced.
No.
I don't know. I just, whatever this team has become in the last 3 or 4 months, they're not the team we've been sold on pre-Christmas. They're just not.
Yeah. Like, is this the week where set pieces go to die and this slow, methodical, every time the ball goes out of play, where it's just going to take half a minute, you know, a minute to get the ball restarted and kind of play football again. I think that's not helping Arsenal at all, this kind of reliance on set pieces. I know they score from open play late on against Sporting, but yeah, there's only so much, you know, you can get out of the physical side of the game, and especially in Europe as well, our referee's going to clamp down more on like the stuff that they're at in the box as well, because quite a lot of the time it's a foul, and the fouls just haven't been given in the Premier League this year. And in fairness to Arsenal, they've taken advantage out of it, but they do feel a little bit tired to me. They do feel
wrecked.
Like,
they look wrecked.
Yeah, and injuries, and Arteta has never had a good record with Arsenal and injuries, especially this time of the year. Whatever they do in training, they obviously train with, you know, massive intensity, and
pens
it's
and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like hamstrings and little calves go here and there.
Yeah.
So yeah, a couple injury doubts as well this weekend, like Bukayo Saka. Yeah. But the thing
about Saka is,
he's like, not even that important.
Yeah, if it was October, November and Saka's out, you're thinking like, Arsenal, what are they going to do? They don't have Saka. It's like, put him, like, Madueke looks fresher than him at the moment. It's not that he's as good a player, but
yeah,
I don't know if they're missing Saka much at all.
They don't utilise their attacking players to the nth degree, like even Keith Tracy and Vinnie Perth discussing that this morning, that even Gyökeres, he looks for the ball so many times against Sporting.
He talks about that, all the way in the game, and it's funny when he's talking about it and you're watching it, and you see the amount of opportunities in real time that they have to give it into him. And like, once or twice when they did, like, he knows what to do. He knows how to be a number nine. He can, like, maybe they don't trust him fully, but that option is just not there. So it's just a semicircle.
It's not. It's like they're
just
not practicing enough.
A semicircle around around the box, waiting for an opportunity to cross it in.
Yeah, and like, because they were scintillating in that game. It was nearly a month ago against Everton. The Max Diamond late goal, and you're thinking they're going to push on from here. This is great. What's
they
happened
were,
since?
But that came from them nearly not winning that game as well. You know, like that was a late flurry, I suppose. You know, that felt like a moment. It did, but it hasn't kicked on.
Like. No, big time. And like Southampton just outthought them in the cup, and like. I would not rule out Sporting doing something crazy at the Emirates either. Like, I know they got the late goal and Arsenal had certainly advantaged them. They could turn around Arsenal and win the second leg 2-3-0, but you wouldn't rule out the Sporting team causing an upset still.
What about Havertz as a... Like, he needs to play a bigger part, doesn't he, for the next month? Like.
Yeah, and I think they're kind of easing him back into the team and in kind of... They're very worried about his fitness, but... You compare like him to Martin Odegaard, who is a doubt for the game tomorrow afternoon. Like Havertz is definitely well worth playing ahead of him. I'd be very like Ebrechiese is another player who's looks like he might miss out again. But Kai Osaka might be back.
It might be a few weeks, Eze, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is that if you were thinking about you know those players. Before this period, you'd be like, oh, Arsenal are screwed without those players. But Kai Havertz offers him so much, though, because he understands how to press really, really well. A bit like Martin Odegaard, too, but Odegaard's not doing enough on the ball. And I think Havertz is a bit more of a genuine goal threat as well. Odegaard's form has fallen off completely.
I do wonder if it's his fault, though, because I was going to say that. It's like you want Havertz in there because he's bigger and stronger and more suited to the way they play. You look at, if you're picking the Arsenal team right now, the way Arsenal play, you have to pick Trossard, I would say, right?
Yeah.
I don't think Trossard's a better player than Martinelli. I don't think he's a better player than Madueke. He's just like, and it's actually not to be down on him. He's doing exactly what they need him to do, and he's actually being very effective for them.
Yeah. He hasn't scored a goal in 2026, though, in any competition.
Fair enough. But what I'm saying is just in terms of his effectiveness within their style of play, which doesn't create any chances. It's like they're designed not to create chances.
Yeah.
I really have to think we have to have some conversations about Arteta, and I don't know whether it's a stress-related paralysis or something like that, but I feel like they just go into this... They shrink the way they're playing the game of football constantly, and the more the pressure's coming on, the worse it's getting.
Yeah,
and it's like there's no ability for any kind of, a couple of styles of play. It's like, let's use the players at our disposal to play a few different ways. Or maybe even we defend this way and we attack at set pieces this way, but these few lads have a bit of freedom when we have the ball. It's low risk.
Yeah.
And this is what we do. But it's not, it's all just, it's squeezed to the nth degree and it's getting more and more paralysed and it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
You mentioned the draws, like the serious amount of draws that Bournemouth get. I was at the 4-4 draw between Manchester United and Bournemouth in before Christmas. And they obviously drew 2-2 more recently before the international
break.
And
they're really good that night. And they should have beat United that night.
The only thing about Bournemouth is they're so good on the counter-attack, so, so dangerous. Like when they get the ball out wide, Ryan or Adley or whoever else, and Christie and Alex Scott clean up. And yet, against a team like Arsenal away from home, how many opportunities will they get to counter-attack? I'm not, like Arsenal won't really push them that much that they need to counter-attack too often. So I almost feel like Bournemouth's strength won't be allowed to use it so much against Arsenal at the Emirates.
Yeah, like Arsenal might just be like, you can have the ball and break us down, and that kind of suits Arsenal. But then I actually think Bournemouth are nearly a better counter-attacking team than Arsenal, which is kind of mad to think about because obviously Arsenal are top of the league. I don't know, like when we come on here and we say stuff about Arsenal, Arsenal fans are like chronically online, and people are critical. But why? Like Chris Forrester was talking about this with Owen and the football show on Wednesday night. Like he just like doesn't, I don't know. There's anything to like about this Arsenal team? Like it's just like
I think it's a personal thing, and it's like it really is. Like
it's not like
I have always. If you look at like any whatever, like the Wenger team, the Thierry Henry team, whatever, like that like. When your team, you're about Manchester United fans, when your team are outside the big groups, you have teams that you'd rather win the league than others. Arsenal have always been my team for that. This isn't the thing
that you'd rather win.
Always. Even back when they were like George Graham, you know, Tony Adams Arsenal, right? But definitely in the Wenger era. I love that Arsenal team. I love that they were Man United's biggest rival. You're automatically, if you're not a United fan in this country, you hate United.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'd veer towards Arsenal. And they were a wonderful football team, like, let's face it as well, you know? But all the way through the Wenger, like, calamity era, always wanted them to come back up and all this. I have no issue with Arsenal winning the league. I don't think this idea... But the fans are very, very defensive because they feel like there's this... Nobody wants us to do it. It's like, it's because your team is absolutely diabolical to watch.
Mm.
And that's fine. That actually, that's one thing about them being certain to watch. The reason we're being so critical of them, I think, is a different thing.
Mm.
The reason we're being so critical of them is because this is, I think, pound for pound, player for player, the best team in English football. And that is why they're in the verge of the semi-finals of the Champions League, and they're on the verge of winning the league, having finished second a few years in a row. They've built this squad. They've spent a lot of money on it. It hasn't just happened organically. They've spent a lot of money on building a really deep and really strong squad. I think they're set up to be very, very good. And like pundits before, when they looked at the best ever Irish team and were accused of not accepting success, they said it could be better. Whether they're right or wrong is another thing, but that's where it comes from.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like, if this Arsenal team were hanging on for 1-0 wins away to Brighton and, you know, were like this scrappy team that were, you know, going for the league, nobody would care about their side of play. Everyone would be delighted to see them doing it. It's because this team is built for success. It's built to be much better than they are.
Yeah. Like, those Arsenal players that have all been signed, like Madueke, Declan Rice, Trossard, they all came from... You know, I think when they were signing for Arsenal, they were like, we're going to play like a particular brand of football that's going to be quite attractive to watch. It's going to be quite exciting to play in.
Eze,
this maverick who, you know, in a world where there's maybe not many football mavericks anymore, like Eze, this exceptional player, but he's only like done it in fits and starts. Like, he's done it recently and then he got injured again and he done it at the start when he signed. He scored that hat-trick against Spurs. But yeah, it's just like, this Arsenal team is just like, I do not enjoy watching them. I don't enjoy watching Declan Rice taking 40 seconds to put his hands up and flick a corner over to the back post. Like, I don't, like Gabriel last week in that Southampton game, in the game away from home, like, makes a big tackle. He's cheering and shouting. I was like, you're playing against Southampton, like a team that's fifth in the championship. Like, this isn't like, that is not the time to be doing that. Like, and it's just been a bit embarrassing for them, really. They're still probably going to win the league and, you know, we'll get pelters for criticising them again. But I don't even think Arsenal fans enjoying watching this team. And you'll see tomorrow, if they don't score early, let's say in the first half, you know, if they don't score until late, like, that Emirates Stadium gets incredibly toxic and incredibly nervous. And we've seen that at the United game, the Manchester United game a few weeks ago as well.
Yeah, it goes quiet.
They're 9-20 and now we bet to win the game. It's 10-3 for a draw.
Is it?
I'm just saying.
They've drawn their last five, Bournemouth.
Exactly. They love a draw and Arsenal could be frustrated.
10-3.
It's funny enough, you say they could win the league. I think Arsenal will win the league. I think they will pick up enough points. I think they'll also get a bit of a run. They could end up, if they stretch that lead and win their next couple of games, they could actually loosen up and win it. Running away.
Yeah, but they should this title should have been wrapped up. Like, they had just ample opportunities to go and, you know, put their foot down and go and win games. Like, remember that 0-0 against Liverpool? That was a chance to go even further ahead, and it was terrible.
But there's another theory that, like, you know, you finish second a lot of times in a row, you do what you have to do to get over the line, and all this kind of like paralysis, as I discussed, or, you know, this conservatism is a natural tendency. And once you win it, like Rory McIlroy at Augusta, you open up the shoulders and you go, I just don't see that happening. No. I don't feel like he's
like
built that way.
Like a dynasty kind of thing.
I don't, not that.
Yeah.
It's more like, will we open up and will we be what we can be?
Yeah.
I don't see Arteta being built that way.
No, they'll always be this horrible team.
There's other managers that might say, we just have to do what we have to do.
To win one,
and then everybody will relax. We'll know we're the best team. We've got this amazing squad. Let's go out and try and do it properly. Mm-hmm. Try to win the league, but win it better. I don't know. Look, we could be all proved wrong. And I hope we are, because if this Arsenal team start playing good football, they're there as, you know, the team. They're going to be the team we have to pay attention to for the next couple of years. So I'd rather watch them be a bit better than this.
I think that's why
people, I get bored. I turn off their matches. I really do.
And I think that's why people like Chris Forrester during the week is like, I'd nearly rather City win it because they play maybe a more attractive style of football that's easier to watch.
Yeah.
Just on that, Arsenal are unbeaten against the current bottom 15 in the Premier League this season. 119, drawn 5.
Really?
Bournemouth have their last 7 away league matches. They've scored first in their term, but they've drawn 4, lost 1. So, like, a draw, you know.
Not bad.
Don't.
10-3.
It's a pretty good price.
Okay. There's three games this weekend that will affect the battle for relegation if we are writing off Burnley.
And Wolves?
Well, I'm certainly writing off Wolves, but they're in one of those games. They're playing tonight away to West Ham. This is a points opportunity, let's face it. Forest are taking on Villa. The two Europa League teams are playing at 2 p.m. In a massive game, possible Europa League semi-final, actually.
Yeah.
But they're playing 2 p.m. on Sunday. And also at the same time, Sunderland play Spurs in Roberto De Zerbi's first game. So there's a good bit on the line here. Spurs, it's really hard for us to talk about what's going to happen with Spurs because Tudor was so ineffective. We have this sort of like assumption that like this is so broken it can't be fixed, but we should probably ignore the last few weeks and think, right, if Frank had gone now and De Zerbi had come in, what would we expect from Spurs? Can this be lifted?
Yeah,
it's a deep hole.
It is, like, and like depending how deep that hole is, it depends on the result tonight between West Ham
the
and
pressure
Wolves.
If West Ham win on
if West
Spurs.
Ham win, then Spurs are in the bottom three. And imagine like Spurs starting life under Roberto with De Zerbi in the bottom three, like panic stations. We think it's panic stations now. It'll be just it'll kind of go into overdrive on Sunday. I remember saying here before that, Igor Tudor will come in and he'll do a rescue job. And they've just enough good players that they should be fine. It now seems like that was a load of nonsense because I really don't see where this Spurs team is going to pick up points. Like, Sunderland away on Sunday is a tough game to start. And I think they've lost one game at home this year to Liverpool. Sunderland in the Stadium of Light, who... You know, you might look at them, Sunderland are mid-table, they're not going to go down, they mightn't probably catch anyone for a European place. But the thing for Sunderland is, if they can finish above Newcastle, could you imagine how much that would mean to their fans and their first season back in the Premier League? So Sunderland are going to be right up for it as well. I just worry for this, you know, Spurs team playing under De Zerbi, who is like wedded to a system no matter what is going on. And a 5-year contract as well.
He's a manager that's wedded to a system to bring in at this stage of a season when he's had a week essentially to get the players used to it. Like, that's not the type of manager you bring in to save you. Like,
that's what we said a couple of weeks ago. 100%. And it would seriously worry me. Like, I don't know if he's the kind of character to just kind of like, is he a rile you up and get the most out of your manager, or is he a guy who plays a style of football? And he could be proven the other way, but our knowledge of him is that he's a style of football manager. Yeah. And that's the worst guy you could be appointed with 7 games to go.
And he falls out with people all the time. Like the guy that scored last night for Bologna against Aston Villa, John Rowe, I think he had a bit of a fallout with him at Marseille and different things.
He played one game for Marseille,
Yeah, so like who's he falling out with first in that Spurs dressing room?
Yeah. Incredible. I agree with you, David. I can't see where Spurs get the points necessarily, and I do think they possibly will be in the relegation zone come the game on Sunday afternoon. But Jesus,
to be relegated on Novi Bet, West Ham are 5-6, Spurs are second at 8-5, and then Forest are 11-2 with Leeds at 6-1.
5-6, 8-2, 8-5. There's not a whole
lot
between
them. Like, this is the assumption that, like, I think 4 or 5 weeks ago we felt like we were trying to like convince people, or like, oh, there's a story here. Spurs are going to be dragged into this. Everybody's on board now. I think I don't think there's an assumption they're going to get out of it at all anymore.
No. Like, the one thing is about this weekend's fixture is that Spurs play their best football away from the toxicity of the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. 20 of their 30 points this term have come from
away
from home. So, and the last game they played away from home was that fairly drab 1-1 draw away to Liverpool at Anfield.
And the home crowd, in fairness, before the game against Forest, before the break, looked class. Like, they you know, welcoming the team in, the team bus, the flares and everything. They looked like, oh, the fans are up for this.
The international break, not only for the Tudor thing, but like, it could not come at the better time for them to have a real break, because if they were playing a midweek match after losing 3-0 to Forest in a must-win match, after the fans decided to put aside their hatred for them for one day, like, that's got to be hard to come back from. But you feel like so much time has passed that it might be okay. And Sunderland are probably in that I don't think they're probably on the beach yet, but they can't be far off it. Like, you know, so they'll have put a lot of effort into getting to this point this season.
Yeah.
And at some point you've done your job, haven't you?
Yeah, you say that, but then, like, they had a lot of players that were that way at AFCON, and I think they're suffering from their physical exertions, let's say, like, February, March
time.
I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Have they had a bit of time off? I know they're playing international fixtures anyway, but like, have they a bit of time off and kind of maybe you get back into like, right, we're going to have one last push. And I think that win against Newcastle away from home is like, that makes their season. And to fully put the, you know, ice on the top of the cake is to finish above Newcastle. And like, Newcastle are in disarray themselves. Eddie Howe's come out this morning saying that no one's fallen out of the club and that he's going to be at Newcastle for the long term. Let's see what happens there. But for Sunderland to come up in that, you know, straight from the Championship and to finish above Newcastle would be an unbelievable achievement for them. So I think they're going to be right up for it as well. And it's, they have maybe one of the more underrated, but one of the best strikers in the league, and Brian Brobbey up front.
Fast.
And he is going to cause problems to Christian Romero, Mickey van de Ven, whoever's playing at the back.
Whoever's not suspended.
Yeah.
West Ham Wolves is tonight, so for anyone, apologies if it's being out of date for anybody who's listening on Saturday morning ahead of the Premier League weekend, but this is an absolute must win for West Ham, and there was a time in the season where guaranteed 3 points, what a way to get your weekend off, especially playing on Friday. That's long gone.
Yeah.
Now maybe Wolves having the break probably came at the wrong time for them as well, but they are like, and, you know, with the way results have gone in the last few weeks, like, any chance of like a super miracle or anything like that is pretty much gone at this stage as well. But at the same time, it's like, I would just be, it's just a nightmare playing Wolves at this stage. Like, you know, when you would look at that in your fixture list and think, right, what do we have to do before the end of the season? Well, we got 3 points tonight. West Ham have an issue at home as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we talked about Spurs. And fans, I don't think, will be as forgiving of, well, hold on, this Wolves team are actually in a bit of form.
Yeah.
I think they'll go there demanding that tonight. So, like, the thing that could get Spurs out of trouble is West Ham. Because even though they got their last minute two goals against Leeds to kind of get them back into it in the cup and stuff like that, it just doesn't feel, it feels like that their bit of momentum is kind of gone now. It's been gone about a month at this stage. It's hard to get that back a second time.
West Ham?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they had a
bit of a run. And it just feels like, are they going to do that again? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, what do they need? If you do the maths, they're on what, 29 points?
Any of these teams get 3 wins, they're staying up.
You think so, yeah?
Yeah.
3 wins be enough, so that'd take them to, what, 38 points? Yeah. 38 is probably going to be enough in this.
Yeah, and this could be won tonight, like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if they win tonight, they only need 2 more wins to get there, you know, and you wouldn't rule West Ham getting little results like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, like, Spurs seem easy to beat, whereas West Ham have, you know, they're still not flying, but they just look more solid. They've gone like kind of 4-4-2, two big men up front in Castellanos and Pablo. They are going to hopefully rely on, for their sake, on like Jared Bowen's creativity, and then everyone else just do a decent job at the back. Like, Mavropanos has been excellent over the last couple
weeks. My god, he was so good against Villa. It was like
insanely good.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable performance. It was honestly, it was like watching Bobby Moore.
Yeah.
In his pomp.
Yeah. But like, so like, Nuno has a track record of just getting the most out of like some average players. Whereas, you know, Spurs and De Zerbi, like, I don't know, De Zerbi is this like idealistic manager who, yeah, he's done obviously a great job at like Sassuolo and he's been at Brighton, whatever, all that kind of thing too. But yeah, I wouldn't be ruling out West Ham, and that's why I think Spurs are going to go down.
And even outside of what De Zerbi does, he's still going to have no players, because it's like news this morning that Mohamed Kudus is their only probably good signing this year, setback in his recovery. He's likely to have surgery. Mm-hmm. Probably won't see him again this season. Mm. It's like, what's going on there? Why can they not? Like, it can't be. We're past the point of it being a coincidence that these players are taking longer with their injuries than everybody else. They're getting more injuries than everybody else. You know, we had Alan Quinlan on yesterday morning on Breakfast talking about being back, you know, doing his crew shit in October and being back for the Heineken Cup final in May. You know what I mean? Mm. It's like, those Spurs players aren't making recoveries like that, you know?
No, no. It's all in their heads. And also, we shouldn't forget the West Ham are buzzing, and Thomas Souček is bouncing into camp after qualifying for the World Cup. So
he scored in another penalty shootout, but finally lost one.
Yeah,
but he scored 3 penalties and 3 penalty shootouts in a week. Like, that's pretty good.
Great going.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I'd be very, very worried as a Spurs fan, as they all are. Forest obviously bought a little bit of space for themselves in the last game. They had a really good result away to Porto last night. One all.
The own goal, by the way.
One of the most amazing own goals I've ever seen.
Just the poor little Porto defender. I don't know if you saw, like the right back just, 2 minutes after Porto taking the lead, they were all over Forrest as well.
25
just
yards.
Without really looking, smacks the ball back to his keeper and just way too much pace in the ball and goes into the net and like it's just ridiculous. So you see it happen every now and again, but just you felt for them, but that's a huge result.
It seems like Chris Wood is back for Forest at a very opportune time of the season, and also for New Zealand for the World Cup as well. So
if there's a man with Chris Wood getting 6 goals between now and the end of the season, wouldn't you? Yeah.
If you're struggling in a relegation kind of situation, Chris Wood is your man to bag you 1 or 2 goals, important goals. He scores like big goals, match winners, and to get you away from the relegation zone.
Be interested to see how they get on Sunday, though, because if you look at like Sunderland, as we mentioned, what do they have to play for? We're talking around Wolves, what do they have to play for? Again, it depends on what the manager has to do. Villa, the manager doesn't have to do anything. They have an awful lot to play for in the league the rest of the season. It's a huge game for them. They're also back in form. And actually, last night's performance against Bologna was illustrative of what Villa's in form is, which is still massively flawed and still like liable to make mistakes and liable to come out of the game for long periods at a time. So it's like they're definitely beatable and they're definitely a team you can get at. But I think they're going to get more results than they have been getting.
And Watkins back in confidence.
Watkins is scoring a little bit now. They've got, mainly it's Tielemans and McGinn being back in that midfield, just makes a massive, massive difference. Bizarrely, Jadon Sancho has picked up an injury at the exact wrong time because, you know, like the United fans will ask, oh, how's Sancho getting on? It's like, he's fine. He's not like, you know, he's been okay. He hasn't been a world beater. He hasn't been this guy that was like, you know, playing for England and missing a penalty in the Euros final or anything like that. But he's been fine. And actually in the last month, he has stepped up from being beyond that to being a player that we really need and is like, you know, providing a lot of creativity on the wing. He's been injured, so he's going to miss a couple of weeks. But Villa have no injuries at the moment, which is, except for obviously Boubacar Kamara is out for the season.
It's funny. Sancho has been angling for that move back to Borussia Dortmund now during the summer. So, again, that injury this time is not
like,
a particular.
He's going to be available on a free. Like he's somebody that I'd like Villa to sign, but at his level, you can't be paying him 130 grand a week.
No,
you know what I mean. It's just like Sancho, that, which they are at the moment, and that's not his full wages. Like United are picking up some of that, but Villa are apparently picking up 130 of his wages.
Jesus.
Yeah. So it's like that. Absolutely can't continue. So if he wants that, he has to go. So
how do you think Unai Emery, Aston Villa, and that squad is going to balance the Europa League? Because I think they're going to be pretty keen to win the Europa League, obviously,
100%,
and qualify for the Champions League through the league.
So they had a really good weekend on the last week. So they won. I can't even remember against who. Was that West Ham? They won in the last game anyway before the break.
Oh yeah,
and Chelsea and Liverpool both lost. And it just bought a little bit of leeway. So there's 6 points clear of Chelsea at the moment. There's only 7 games left this season.
Yeah.
You know, and how many games do we see Chelsea winning?
Yeah, what's
West
Ham?
We've just talked about them losing this week, in all likelihood. So Villa don't need to do a huge amount.
No.
And what I think what they might do is, as they did in the year they finished fourth, is give it all until it's done.
Yeah,
and then I think the season might, you know, I'd say if Villa have nothing to play for on the last day of the season against Manchester City, sorry Arsenal, you know, because that could be 6 or 7 nil, like, you know. But I think they might be able to just keep going until they don't have to do it anymore.
And it's Porto,
you know?
Forest, isn't it? Porto or Forest in the semi-final.
Yeah. So. And they haven't won it yet, but like that last minute goal last night was pretty big, to be honest, because it also does take the pressure off this weekend, because you go and say, right, next Thursday, it's not in the bag, but
get a goal early.
Like, for example, I'd say it'll be one of those games where Ming starts instead of Pau Torres and Douglas Luiz starts ahead of Onana, you know, and the 3 or 4 players that might just need that little bit of a rest.
Yeah.
It won't be wholesale changes or anything. Anyway, that's that relegation. That was our focus. The next focus is, funny we finish on Villa because we're getting into Champions League contenders, right? So Manchester United playing Leeds on Monday night, as we mentioned. I think we're all pretty confident that United are going to make it, despite points-wise, they're only a point ahead of Villa. They're not there yet, but we just think United are going to pick up the points, I think, between now and the end of the season. Liverpool-Fulham. ties into the sneaky big game of the weekend, which is Brentford-Everton. Because if one of these teams win tomorrow, I think it can only be one who can, because they're playing each other now. I think if one of these teams win, Liverpool and Chelsea have seriously got to start thinking about both of them, or about whichever one it is.
About the winner, yeah.
Yeah, and because we're too late in the season now for to assume that somebody's going to fall off.
Yeah.
And there is not a big points difference there. And I think they've been looking at it as, you know, maybe take United out of it and saying, well, there's two spots there and it's down to Liverpool, Chelsea and Villa. Ah, we'll be fine. You start adding Brentford or Everton into that, there's a lot less margin for error. And I think they're in it. And the on what we saw last weekend and then on Wednesday night, I don't think you can guarantee Liverpool are going to beat Fulham on Saturday evening.
No, they don't have a great record against Fulham either. Like, I think I remember listening to the game the last time and Harrison Reed scored an absolute screamer after Liverpool had scored late on to draw that game at Craven Cottage. Mm-hmm. Liverpool seem that they are... yeah, just the, you know, just kind of devoid of all confidence and hope. And I think that performance during the week against Paris Saint-Germain is like he had slot all season, earned a slot all season saying, giving out about set pieces, giving out about low blocks, and then he goes to Paris Saint-Germain and plays five across the back. They're taking long throws from Joe Gomez. Like, everything that, you know, he was against, he has suddenly become. And I think that's just a nail in the coffin for his Liverpool career. And I feel sorry for him because of the situation that Liverpool found themselves in this year after what happened during the summer. But this is the end of Arne Slot, and I think they probably need to get rid of him before the end of the season.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because, okay, like, it's bad now, but it could just little be, even if it's a little bit better between now and the end of the season, no matter who that interim manager is, no, it should just be a little bit better than what it is now, even if, you know, the manager, whoever comes in, doesn't do like an amazing job and turn things around. I think it's just got to a point where it's just best for all parties to move on, and then you get Xabi Alonso in the summer, because I think that's a
Igor Tudor till the end of the season and then Xabi Alonso in the summer.
Well, here's hoping, Shane.
Thomas Frank.
Yeah, you talk about Brentford or Everton, like the winner of that going up to, you know, they would leapfrog Chelsea by a point ahead of Sunday, obviously, and level with, or just behind Liverpool in goal difference. But if Fulham beat Liverpool, you know, they move 2 points behind Fulham, Liverpool in the table, so they're sneakily...
It's a long way back for Fulham, though. Again, there is only seven games left, but... Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
You just
they
never
could
go know.
Up to 47 points and it could be a draw in the other game. Chelsea could lose. But I think you're looking at Europa League at that stage rather than somebody will pick up points. But I just, the idea that it's going to be Liverpool, I don't know. They're, like, let's look at Liverpool's fixtures here, right? Rest of the season. They have Fulham this week, obviously. And then they'll go out with the Champions League then.
Good old Trafford, don't they?
Tuesday night. No, they go to Everton next.
Yeah.
Next weekend, right? Again, if Everton win tomorrow, they'll be level on point. Well, they could be 3 points behind Liverpool. We'll see what happens against Fulham. But they're home to Palace. Then they're at Old Trafford. Then they've home to Chelsea, away to Villa, home to Brentford.
That's nasty, isn't it?
Every game except for the Palace game is against someone, is against a team in and around them.
Yeah. Which can be a good thing or a bad thing. But from where we're looking at it now, it's going to be a bad thing, you'd imagine.
And Liverpool, Palace...
Yeah.
Like, how many times have we seen that that game, like, you know? It's an unbelievable run at the end of the season.
That's they have the toughest run in, I think, of United, of Chelsea, Liverpool, United, even Brentford. I think of the teams chasing the top five positions, Liverpool.
If you said to Keith Andrews at the start of the season, or you said to any of us, you have to go to Anfield on the last day of the season and a win gets you the Champions League at the expense of Liverpool.
Oh,
unbelievable. It's a definite possibility.
I sat here.
What a story.
I remember the night we sat here really early in the season. I watched Brentford and Chelsea on a random Saturday night game where they scored a last minute equaliser, but it had been brilliant. It was at home. And I remember thinking, they're going to be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And there was still this sense that they wouldn't be or whatever. And it was just like, there's something, that team is going to be hard to beat, and that's not going to disappear.
Yeah.
I think they're going to run. But it'd be funny now, if Everton do beat them this week, and then they have Liverpool next week.
Yeah.
Like, I think their stories, no matter what, it's actually going to be a brilliant run-in.
They had a bit of a wobble, like, let's say 6-7 weeks ago, Brentford, and then they won one and have drawn the last three fixtures, I think, as well. So they've kind of steadied the ship again. And every time there's a wobble, Keith Andrews and the Brentford coaching staff and the players seem to, like, get together, they figure a few things out, they kind of maybe alter the system a little bit, and then they become hard to beat again, and they pick up enough points to keep them on this momentum. The great thing about Brentford is that they have Igor Thiago in front, who scores another Premier League goal. It'll be his 20th of the season. What a story that is.
He could still beat Haaland. It's going to take a lot. Haaland keeps banging in hat-tricks. It's obviously not going to happen. But
for Irish football, Irish coaches, it's a massive opportunity for Keith Andrews. And yeah, it'd be great. I think it'd be great to see him in a European competition.
Spectacular. And you've got two Irish players there as well. Two of our most important players playing Champions League next season as well. So definitely not ruling them out at this stage. Well, I suppose we're only after ruling them in a few minutes ago, so it'll be a bit early to rule them in. Okay, thanks, lads. We'll have loads of time to talk about United and Leeds over the course of the weekend. Absolutely. Shane, I'm sure, and on Monday. That's all time we have for you. Don't forget that there is a 10 euro, NoviBet will offer up to a 10 euro free bet if any of your bet builder loses on the biggest Premier League match of the weekend, every weekend. That is Chelsea versus Man City this weekend. We've done our NoviBet off the ball bet builder as well for that one. And we'll be back with you next Friday.
Inside the Odds on Off the Ball with NoviBet. Get up to 50% boost on all bet builders with NoviBet. Download and play today. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.